Blog Talk Radio.
John. Here, you've earned this. You wrote it big enough?
Mm, yes, old King George should be able to see that.
When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, a decent respect requires that they declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to establish new government. We therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, do and with the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved of all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. In the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
Finest people, where is thy salute?
For presenting yourselves on this battlefield.
I give you thanks.
This is our army. To join it, you give homage.
I give homage to Scotland.
And if this is your army, why does it go?
We didn't come here to fight for them.
Oh, the English are too many.
I am William Wallace.
William Wallace is 7 feet tall.
Yes, I've heard. Killed men by the hundreds. And if he were here, he'd consume the English with fireballs from his eyes and bolts of lightning from his arms. I am William Wallace. And I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You've come to fight as free men. And free men you are. What will you do with that freedom? Will you fight?
Fight against that? No! We will run! And we will live.
Aye.
fight and you may die. Run, and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your bed, many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Tonight, great podcast, understanding the times in which you live today.
God save the Republic. Our fathers appealed to heaven. What did heaven do? Heaven heard. Heaven heard. Our fathers said they would treat all men equal. When they did not, heaven saw. Heaven saw. Our fathers fought each other and paid a great price. Father Abe kept the Union, but not the Republic. We forgot the Republic and placed our trust in man and suffer oppression. We appealed to heaven. What did heaven do? Heaven heard. Heaven heard. God save the Republic.
All right, everybody, Joseph Gibson podcasting here live, understanding the times in which we live today. I think an interesting thing with all this stuff going around in today's times and whatnot and the division amongst the people, we need to go back maybe and look at how things have changed or have they changed. Maybe things are all the same and maybe they haven't changed so much, or maybe it's one class of people have become weaker and aren't standing up for what's right, or have we learned from our mistakes of yesterday and we're just not producing the facts and realizing what is happening to us today. So I'm going to play this real quick. This is an interesting this had me watching it for this was a very interesting documentary. It was Mike Wallace, and this was on national TV, CBS, and it's a very interesting documentary. So I'm just going to go ahead and start it off. The audio is really good, so there shouldn't be any problems with the audio. And it's a little bit long, but I think everybody will get the picture of what I'm trying to say and the documentary itself and examine and understand the times which we live today. So I'm going to go ahead and start that up. Get up here.
Correspondent Mike Wallace. Summer 1966 was a season of revelation for the white man in the North. For the first time, he began fully to comprehend the intensity of his feelings and his fears about the black man. For years, he had watched, smug and fascinated, as the trials of the Southern black and white were played out for him like some morality play on his television screen. But he remained a spectator, only half involved. Then came summer 1966. And as riots crackled through his cities, the Northern white man came to realize the depth of his confusion, his animosity, and fear. Black power was the catalyst, a phrase shouted by a 25-year-old revolutionary on a Mississippi highway. It was a rallying cry to Northern blacks mired in frustration and bitterness, a cry that sounded like a threat of violence, of vengeance, to a white man fed up with racial turmoil. The violence struck not just where it was expected, in the human ghettos of the major urban centers in Brooklyn, Chicago, at the end of summer, white police political leaders up and down the nation on all levels were voicing their concern. I've heard it said that the cause of civil rights has fallen backward in this past year. And those who are critical say that riots and violence have produced new waves of white resistance to further progress. That the civil rights movement itself is rent by factionalism and extremism. And vital civil rights legislation has apparently floundered in the Congress for this session. And political candidates running on a platform never have defeated good men of moderate progressive views. Now, my fellow Americans, I would be less than honest with you if I did not say that in all of this there is some grain of truth.
These guys have been in and out of trouble so much you could fill a book. But unfortunately, the Supreme Court ruling, where we have to handle these characters like daffodils instead of the bums that they are, where we could throw them in a jail where they belong, no, we have to tap them on the wrist. Now, the other problem which caused this situation is the NAACP. Their continual announcements of planned demonstrations, their continual announcements of mass meetings, has whipped these people up in a frenzy, these irresponsible hoodlums, who the so-called civil rights workers are working in their behalf for first-class citizenship. I think the NAACP should turn right around and start doing something about demonstrating against these undesirables in their own race and nationality.
I don't think I have ever seen as strong a reactionism as I had in Atlanta and in Georgia. I'm perfectly frank and honest about it. It has upset the status quo of established voting patterns in the state of Georgia that never before had been upset. The state went Republican the first time in the last presidential election. It went that way entirely on the race issue. We will have major changes in the runoffs that are now coming up in the general election this year. I wouldn't attempt to identify each one of them, but I would say I have never seen as strong a reaction amongst the white citizen as there is at the present time.
That was Ivan Allen, the mayor of Atlanta, Georgia, a leading moderate on racial matters. He strongly favored and testified in behalf of the 1964 Civil Rights Bill. His city has long been looked on as remarkable for its progress in relations between the races. It is also the home of the national headquarters of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee.
Don't be afraid. Don't be ashamed. We want black power.
Graduate with a degree in philosophy. It was here in Mississippi this summer that Carmichael, with his cry for black power, first became a national figure, and to many, a frightening one.
Every house in Mississippi ought to be burned down tomorrow to get rid of the dirt in here. Now, from now on, when they ask you what you want, you know how to tell them. What do you want?
Stokely Carmichael one night earlier this month in Atlanta. He wore an African toga given him by Secretary of Guinea, a reminder, he said, of his African heritage.
I think that there's a realization in this country that black power is not just a mere slogan, nationally or internationally. It is real that black people can come together and start determining for their lives how they're going to live and controlling their economic and political lives.
Why talk about dynamite sticks if Molotov cocktails won't work? When you talk of black power, building a movement that will smash everything that Western civilization has created, when you say that black power should bring the country to its knees anytime it messes with a black man, and these are quotes from Stokely Carmichael, the picture has got to be, in the mind of white men and black men, one of a man who threatens violence.
On the contrary, if you say that you have to bring the country to its knees if it messes with a black man, you're saying that the only protection for black people is that they unite. so that when one black man is touched, because he's black, there's some protection for him. Now, it's obvious that that protection does not exist in this country. It does not now exist. And the only people who can have that protection are black people. And black people know that. The white people may not know that. So it means that you have to build a movement so strong in this country that if one black man is touched, every black man will rise up and let this country know they're not going to tolerate it.
If one black man is touched.
That's right, because he's black. I mean, if a black man is walking down the streets of Mississippi, down the highway with a rifle in his hand, he's shot because he is black.
That's one incident.
I can name you a lot of others, and you know that yourself. In the northern ghettos, if one black man in California is driving his pregnant wife to the hospital and he is shot by a white racist policeman, I can name you more incidents.
Then you're saying fight violence with violence.
I am saying that we must build a movement of black people that will protect ourselves so that we are willing to stop that by any means necessary. Now, I'm not concerned about the question of violence. It seems to me that that will depend upon how, in fact, white people respond. If white people, in fact, are willing not to bother with black people because they are black, then there's going to be no question of violence.
When you read stories about difficulties, riots in Omaha or Cleveland, or Brooklyn, or Chicago, or wherever.
I call them rebellions.
Rebellions. And you see nothing wrong with them?
I think that it is people who are rebelling against a system that has locked them inside tight of ghettos, that exploit and oppress them, and they have no means of redress to break that system down. We intend to build within black people the realization but that problem is not theirs. It's created by white society. It's purposely created by white society, and then they throw it back on us and blame us. That's the first thing we have to create in black people. Then secondly, we have to move to a position where we can control the housing in our neighborhoods so that we're not exploited, so that we're not charged high rent to share apartments with rats, and so that the owners of those apartments don't live in the suburbs grabbing the profits from us, that we're able to grab it, and that the money will be able to stay in our community so we can develop it. It is no different from a colony in Africa who is supposedly free, but her resources are controlled by the mother country. They have to move to a position to control the resources, and having done that, their problems are already solved.
And the means that you will use to achieve all of this?
Well, any means necessary.
Well, I know, but now we'll spell that out. What does that mean?
It means that we will develop tactics as we go along, and whatever those tactics are, we will use them.
Tactics? That means you've got to buy the buildings. You've got to start the businesses. You've got to train the people. How are you going to do that by yourself? How are you going to do it without the help of the white community?
Well, the first help we'd need of the white community is just to turn over those buildings to us.
Turn them over?
That's correct. Turn them over.
You think that's likely, Mr. Carmichael?
Well, you asked me what help we wanted white people to give. Oh, they could buy it for us.
You mean Washington would buy it from, let's say, the slumlord and turn it over to you?
That's correct.
You believe really that that is the salvation of the black man?
I think that this country is run by property ownership, and that black people are not only propertyless, they are viewed as property. And we have to move to a position of property ownership in this country so that we can bargain from a position of strength with racists rather than a position of weakness.
You're one black man who went to a good, essentially white high school in the city of New York.
That's
you
right.
Obviously have had a good education.
That's
a good many of the people who work with you here in SNCC can say the same thing.
And we're saying that...
And you're a black man who came from a New York ghetto.
And we're saying that there's a system that allows for one or two black people to get out. And that's the rationale for keeping other black people down.
And it has nothing to do with the unwillingness or inability of the Negro to help himself and to work hard.
That's the rationale, that the reason why black people aren't this is because they're lazy, unambitious, stupid, have rhythm, and they eat watermelon.
You call on the black man to refuse to respond to his draft call.
That is correct. And we will continue to do so while there's breath in our bodies.
Do you really believe that the military policies of the United States are designed to exterminate the black man, as you've said?
I certainly do. I look at the recent statement by racist McNamara, who says that 30% of the people that are going to be drafted now under his new system are going to be black people, and that's nothing more than black urban removal.
The white liberal, who supported civil rights for so long with time and effort and money, what is your feeling about him?
I think that there's no reason why they should stop supporting the movement now. I certainly feel that if they're genuinely interested in black people, and since black people have charted a course, they believe in that program, they will continue to give to it. They need more white people to civilize whites. They need them to civilize the savages in Cicero, who throw rocks and bricks at a peaceful and lovable black man like Dr. Martin Luther King, who would not even hurt a fly. And that's very important, because our uncles and our fathers and our older brothers died in World War I fighting Nazism to protect the Poles, and those same Poles turn around and throw rocks and bricks at us after we died to save their lives. And people talk about we are savages.
Mr. Carmichael, if you had the chance to stand up in front of the white community and say anything you desired, say to them, understand me, white man, what would you say?
I would say, understand yourself, white man, that the white man's burden should not have been preached in Africa, but it should have been preached among you. That you need now to civilize yourself. You have moved to destroy and disrupt. You have taken people away. You have broken down their systems. And you have called all that civilization. And we who have suffered at this are now saying to you, you are the killers of the dreams. You are the savages. Yes, it is you who have always been uncivilized. Civilize yourself.
This young man who calls upon the white man to civilize himself had a radical effect on the civil rights movement with his cry of black power. Not only did it produce a predictable reaction in the white community, but it added to the strains within the movement itself. The five leading civil rights groups range from the conservative NAACP and the Urban League to CORE and SNCC, by far the most militant. Although they will not criticize each other publicly, leaders of the various groups inevitably are caught up in a popularity contest, and they are acutely aware of the need to present a public posture of militancy. This summer, Martin Luther King was on the defensive. His open housing drive in Chicago was not getting results, and so the people of SNCC and CORE began to sneer at the fruitless demonstrations and meetings held by Dr. King's Southern Christian Leadership Conference. King's people acknowledged that they needed a victory if there were not to be defections from their forces. That victory finally came when Dr. King threatened to march on the suburban town of Cicero. Chicago civic leaders feared violence there, so at a hastily assembled summit meeting, they agreed to some concessions, and King called off his march. Through it all, though, he had insisted that no matter what the competition from his more militant black brothers, he would never renounce his policy of nonviolence.
Now what I'm saying is this. I would like for all of us to believe in nonviolence, but I'm here to say tonight that if every Negro in the United States turns against nonviolence, I'm going to stand up as a lone voice and say this is the wrong way.
I will never change in my basic idea that nonviolence is the most potent weapon available to the Negro in his struggle for freedom and justice. I think for the Negro to turn to violence would be both impractical and immoral.
There is an increasingly vocal minority who disagreed totally with your tactics, Dr. King.
There's no doubt about that. I will agree that there is a group in the Negro community advocating violence now. I happen to feel that this group represents a numerical minority. Surveys have revealed this. The vast majority of Negroes still feel that the best way to deal with the dilemma that we face in this country is through nonviolent resistance. And I don't think this vocal group will be able to make a real dent in the Negro community in terms of swaying 22 million Negroes to this particular point of view. And I contend that the cry of black power is at bottom a reaction to the reluctance of white power to make the kind of changes necessary to make justice a reality for the Negro. I think we've got to see that a riot is the language of the unheard. And what is it that America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear that the economic plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years.
How many summers like this one do you imagine that we can expect?
Well, I would say this, we don't have long. The mood of the Negro community now is one of urgency, one of saying that we aren't going to wait, that we've got to have our freedom. We've waited too long. So that I would say that every summer we are going to have this kind of vigorous protest. My hope is that it will be nonviolent. I would hope that we can avoid riots because riots are self-defeating and socially destructive. I would hope that we can avoid riots, but that we will be as militant and as determined next summer and through the winter as we have been this summer. And I think the answer about how long it will take will depend on the federal government, on the city halls of our various cities, and on white America to a large extent. This is where we are at this point, and I think white America will determine how long it will be and which way we go in the future.
Even Senator Jacob Javits asked the question recently. He said that he was a slum resident, but he and some of his fellow Jews were able to make it out of the ghetto on the Lower East Side. The same thing is true with lots of Irish, Italians. And he asked the question why the Negro finds it so difficult to make his way up out of the ghetto. You did.
No other racial group has been a slave on American soil. It's nice to say other people were down and they got up. They were not slaves on American soil. The other thing is that the Negro has had high visibility, and because of the prejudices existing in this country, his color has been against him. It's been against him, and they've used this to keep him from moving up. In the final analysis, when you say to a man that you are in this position because of your race or because of your color, say to that man that he can never get out of it. Other racial groups have been able maybe to change the accent or change the names, but the Negro can't.
Martin Luther King is going through an agonizing reappraisal. He doesn't belong to the decadent aristocratic colonials of the civil rights movement. Who are the decadent aristocratic? They are, I don't call names, but the names are obvious. Martin Luther King has done a yeoman job. He's got the guts to keep on doing it. And once he knows what black power really means, he doesn't know what it means.
What does it mean?
It means dignity. It doesn't mean violence. It means integrity. It doesn't mean anti-white. It means proud of being black. It means you're willing to cooperate with your white brother and sister if they're going to cooperate with you in terms of giving you the same things that they have. That's what it means.
But you suggest that he might be going through an agonizing reappraisal that will wind him up where? Third phase of that revolution. And does that mean casting his principles of nonviolence?
None of us have cast them aside. I don't think so. We have either. This means that we are cast aside, that we are not going to let nonviolence go all the way. That when nonviolence comes to the point of violence, we're going to meet violence with violence for our manhood.
search for what they call manhood is among Negro males' most urgent motivations. It is especially so with the young militants. They call it their search for identity, for dignity, in a world in which they have too long been dictated to by whites.
A Negro architect helped design this building, the International Arrivals Building, Kennedy Airport. Daniel Watts, a graduate of Columbia University, was making $15,000 a year working for the white architectural firm of Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill when he quit 6 years ago. He quit, he says, to seek his own black manhood as publisher of a black revolutionary magazine he calls The Liberator. It is a sounding board for the angriest anti-white writers in the black community. I asked Dan Watts about the thinly veiled threat of violence in all his writings.
I don't think there's a thin veil threat of violence. I feel that at this juncture, because for a period of 100 years, the white establishment has built a barrier between the white power structure and the black community. This barrier being a wall consisting of neurotic white liberals and their house niggers that they draw from the community with their various schemes to integrate us. The first thing that we have to do is knock this wall down forcibly in order to confront the white power structure with our demands.
Who are the house niggers you're talking about?
Roy Wilkins, your Martin Luther King, your Whitney Young. They do not represent the aspirations of the brother who is standing out there on 121st Street in Lenox Avenue now, who doesn't even have two coins to rub together. I suggest that my good white, so-called good white friends hate this civil right that they want to give me. They should keep it and give me money and power instead.
Keep civil rights.
They should let them keep it for themselves. Since it's such a wonderful commodity, I think the whites should keep it and just give the black people the money and the power.
Give you money and power in what form?
All right, the money and power in what form? Instead of the dole, the handout, the welfare, the federal government should look upon the black ghetto as the black community as a kind of, and you've heard this before, an undeveloped state. Except it's a hostile state. Black people constituting at best 11% of the population are incapable, and militarily are incapable of overthrowing the United States. But we are capable of disrupting the economy of the United States. Now, when the power structure gets this into their head and begin to look upon us as a hostile force within their midst, then they will begin to deal with us on some meaningful plane.
And your policy is hot summers?
Hot summers, finally forcing a direct confrontation with the white power structure where we say, this is what we want. What are you prepared to negotiate now? We don't want brotherhood. You keep the brotherhood.
In other words, you think that the white community eventually will try to buy peace from the Negro.
They'll rather do two things. Either they will try to buy this peace in terms of meaningful negotiations, or they will march us off the concentration camp led by Louis Armstrong playing We Shall Overcome and by Martin Luther King as we go through the gates. See, white America still doesn't believe that black people are serious. King is just a new form of entertainment. Perhaps he doesn't shuffle his shoes the way Stephen Fetcher did, but he's still entertainment for you.
Is it a fact, Mr. Watts, that in a score of major American cities, there is a hard core of Negro extremists ready to fight?
You know, that's probably better than I do. I do not have access to FBI files, but you call them extremists, I'd rather call them freedom fighters.
You think they're ready?
Oh, yes, there's no question about it. I think that what happened in Watts is just a prologue. Because whites still don't believe. They still don't believe that black people mean it when they say that we want power, we want black power. They don't believe it. They still think there's somebody else. It's very curious. So they're curious about the white mentality. You tell a white man you love him, he believes it. But you tell a white man, you know, I'm getting ready to split your throat, he can't believe it. It's inconceivable to his psyche to believe that a black man would want to cut his throat. Now, this is part of the race hang-up.
You know, of course, that the heavy weight of power is on the side of the law. If it comes to a confrontation, an armed confrontation,
right,
between you and what you call the white power structure,
yeah,
you people are going to lose your lives, you're going to lose what property you've put together, and you're going to lose your opportunity.
Yes, but you see, Mike, we are black boy, the black man that is shot in the back by a white policeman while he's handcuffed on the way into the station for allegedly trying to escape, that is dying. The child who is dying of malnutrition because of the oppressive economic system where the parents can't find work, that's death. So what I am suggesting is if we must die, let it be a meaningful death. If my mother and father were prepared to die the way my generation is, I think we would have been much closer toward a solution to the American dilemma of racism.
Daniel Moynihan was Assistant Secretary of Labor in both the Kennedy and Johnson administrations. He is the author of the controversial report on the Negro family, unofficially called the Moynihan Report. Long a student of Negro-white tensions in the United States, he is today director of the Joint Center for Urban Studies at MIT and Harvard. I asked Moynihan about the impact of a Dan Watts and a Stokely Carmichael.
Well, I would hope we would think that there's something to hope for from a Stokely Carmichael and a Dan Watts. Now, they use a vocabulary that's pretty discouraging, pretty disrupting. People get excited and whites get upset. Well, they want you to get upset. And whoever met a 26-year-old social reformer didn't want you to get upset with what he had to say to you. But the things that Dan Watts asks for are not things that a person shouldn't be asking for. There are things he isn't entitled to. I mean, a man like Dan Watts is a skilled-trained architect, a university man, an American citizen. All he's saying is, give me and give us what is by right the situation of any American, or if you don't, you're going to have trouble.
Well,
we don't need the trouble. We can give him what he's asking.
The trouble he threatens, of course, is violence. He says that he will disrupt American society. It means blowing manhole covers or possibly derailing trains or sniping or whatever until the white man comes to the bargaining table and negotiates, buys peace from the black man.
All Dan Watts has said is that what's already going on is going to continue to go on, and I don't know why he isn't right. I think that he is more likely to be right and likely to know more about it than I do, for heaven's sakes. Where I think perhaps he is asking for things he can't quite get is in his own feeling of there are those whites out there, and they will come to bargain with us, the Negroes. Unfortunately, or fortunately, life is not that simple. There's no such thing as Negro or Negro opinion or Negro power any more than there is white or white power. There's just a great mixture, a great confusion, a large system. And it never comes down to neat conclusions of that kind. We will come to the bargaining table and bargain. But there isn't any doubt about one thing, which is that violence terrifies organized communities, middle-class communities. And another fact, a sad fact of life, is that violence works sometimes.
Who is closer to the dissatisfied Negro in the North? Stokely Carmichael, Dan Watts, Martin Luther King?
Martin Luther King, surely. He's much more national figure, but also he's much more in keeping with the political oral traditions of the Negro American.
Cicero is a town of first and second generation Americans, mostly Czechs, Poles, Lithuanians, Italians. Plus a late sprinkling of whites up from the United States South, mostly blue-collar workers, hard-working, law-abiding, overwhelmingly Republican, overwhelmingly for Goldwater in the last election. Homes are built one hard upon the other, scarcely a step apart. There is little vacant land in Cicero, virtually no slum, and there is fierce pride in property.
The average person out here, he's not a bank president, he's not a wealthy industrialist, he's a $80, $90, $100 a week man. Maybe now the times are good, he's making $120. The biggest investment he'll ever make in his life is that house. That house to him means it's everything in the world for him. And when someone is going to bring down the value of that home, or destroy it, or his neighbor is going to live in such a way that it may affect his property, it hits him right in the heart and in the pocketbook both, and he'll fight for it.
I walked down 25th Place, an attractive, if modest, residential street picked at random. houses worth $15,000 to $25,000. Why, I wondered, is it so important to keep Negroes from living here? As you listen to the answers, ask yourself how different is the reaction in your own community.
Well, I'll tell you, property depreciates that Negroes move into a certain neighborhood. They'll buy one building, maybe a dozen families move into that building. Then you got a mess.
Of course, these are just one-story, one-family buildings here, most of them, some of them two families.
So they bought this building here, it's a six-room apartment. They might have two families living in there. And they might put another family down in the basement, maybe two families down in the basement. There you take them. So the mess there again.
So it's just because you think they might be messy neighbors, that's the only reason.
That's the only reason. If there was one family in one building, and they took care of that place, I don't see why people would tolerate it.
How would you feel about Negroes moving in here to Cicero?
Well, I really don't know, but some Negroes are clean and some aren't. And if they move in on this property, then they clean and I would stay with them.
What does your mom and dad say about it?
Well, they say, well, I really don't know. They don't say too much about it.
Are they enthusiastic or no?
No. My dad says if they do, well, we're just going to have to move.
Is that your mother up there working?
Yes, it is.
Let's see if I can't talk to her for just a moment. Ma'am, I wonder if I could ask you to come on down the stairs just an instant and talk to me. There's been so much talk recently about Cicero and Negroes and property values. What's your view?
Well, I'm perfectly satisfied with the neighbors we have. We have old homes here. We take very good care of them.
I see that you do.
And when it would come right down to it, I don't think we would object to other neighbors if they would come up to our standards of living.
Do you think that the fact that a man is a Negro or a woman is a Negro, on the face of it, simply makes them an undesirable neighbor?
No, not really. I've known so many colored people that are so nice. But like I say, I think they have to learn to live the way we do and take care of things.
How do people learn to live that way?
By hard work. We have worked very, very hard for what we have. We've been here 30 years, and we didn't get anything for nothing. We've worked very hard for what we have, and we're still working hard to maintain it.
How would you feel, truly, if a colored family were to move in over there with the washers hanging on the line?
Oh, I don't know. I really couldn't say. Probably get along very good with them. If they leave me alone, I leave them alone.
Afraid to go out at night?
What kind of colored people living around here?
You mean you think they're violent people?
Well, some of them are. There are some that really would be like that, and there are some good ones, too. And you really couldn't trust any of them.
There are many good colors, and I worked with some of them, and I liked them, and I liked this person that I said works at the lounge over there. But there's the ones that are going to march I don't like, and I can't stand. I got no use for it. And when your church tells you human rights, and you pay no attention to your church. I pay attention to my church when they say about human rights. But what the marchers want, they don't want rights. They say they want peaceful coexistence. How can they have peaceful coexistence when there's all this trouble? Who makes the trouble? They do, by marching. There's got to be a simpler way. What simpler way can you think of? Talks. Just talks. Well, there are human rights commissions in various towns around Chicago, none in Cicero. They can make them. You think they should? They should. I just think that there's got to be a better way than marches. Because there's no use for them. If, let's say, 10 or 20 families moved into Cicero, which is a town of 70,000, they'd get killed. Cicero is an industrial town. It doesn't mind that Negroes work in the factories there. 15,000 of them do. And they trade at Cicero banks and supermarkets. But not a single Negro family sleeps in Cicero. Not one spends the night. I asked some workers why.
Because they don't know the Negro.
Protestant Yankee to the Catholic Irish when he arrived was very similar
that of whites reacting to Negroes now. The big fact, though, and the one that's hard to overcome, is of color. I mean, you can always somehow think you can see a Negro. I'd like to suggest that that's not necessarily so either, because 25 years ago in this country, if you remember, Japanese were yellow, Chinese were yellow, and the federal government discriminated against American-born Japanese as it has never discriminated against any group in our history. In the intervening quarter century, the Japanese, Chinese, America have become our most educated, our most entrepreneurial, our, in terms of census data, as we say, our highest social economic group in this nation. And where did the yellow go? They ceased to be colored.
Hasn't the white community in the United States changed its attitude toward the Negro of Harlem, wherever Harlem is, in the last?
Yes, I think it has. There is a withdrawal of sentiment that cannot be mistaken. And I think in all candor, we have to admit to ourselves that some of the violence in the cities this summer have made it appear to many that the Negroes were aggressors. And whether they had any reason for being aggressors is another question entirely. People don't think very far beyond that point. So that the sympathy for the oppressed is not there to begin with. And you have to start dealing with much more complicated problems.
How serious do you imagine the white backlash will be this November in votes?
Well, the backlash, if that's the word, has already been felt. We lost the Civil Rights Act. We did not get the president's bill. The most powerful Democratic liberal voting majority in the history of the century, probably, in Congress, didn't do what it ought to have done. And the reason it did not has been fairly clear, the withdrawal of sympathy around the country.
In view of what seems to be the climate in the white community, is it possible that we simply won't make racial progress without racial violence?
You could write a scenario, as the strategists say, by which the whites withdrew, by which problems got worse, for which Negro frustrations grew, which led to the whites withdrawing more, and are escalating ourselves into a genuine racial confrontation in this country. You could do that. It's happened before in the world. I don't think it will happen here, because in the end it's in no one's interest for it to happen.
Lewis Harris is one of this nation's foremost public opinion analysts in years gone by and again this summer. His poll takers have tested public sentiment for Newsweek magazine on all the issues involving the black man and the white man, North and South. Harris, how much of a change has there been in the northern white man's attitudes toward the black man during the summer of 1966?
Mike, there have been dramatic shifts that have taken place over the summer. For example, you find that compared with 2 years ago, when you had white people split 50-50 over whether Negroes were trying to move too fast, now you find almost 3-1 white people think the pace of civil rights progress is too fast in this country. Or what is at the root of the white man's change of attitude? I think perhaps most dramatic is in the area of demonstrations, where you found back in 1963, on the eve of the March on Washington, a majority of white people felt that such demonstrations could help the cause of Negroes achieving civil rights in this country. Before this summer began, you found it was about 2-1 white people feeling that demonstrations were hurting the Negro cause. At the end of the summer, now we find in this month of September, we find 81-19, 4-1, white people think the demonstrations of the civil rights movement hurt the Negro cause.
Negro violence, I suppose, has a good deal of what is imagined, understood to be Negro violence.
Well, the demonstrations, I think, would not have had this impact if it hadn't been for the fear that whites have over the violence of riots that have taken place in Negro ghettos in northern cities and, in fact, in Atlanta and some southern cities. As a consequence, back in 1963, you found that better than 7 out of 10 whites thought that Negroes were committed to nonviolence. Today, this is very nearly an even division, with just over a majority feeling Negroes aren't violent. And when you break this down by low-income people, you find that hardly more than a third of the low-income white people in this country are convinced that Negroes are not violent.
Which Negro demands breed the most hostility, Mr. Harris?
Well, you find, Mike, that education, whites bristle some at that, some on jobs, a little more on welfare, but most of all, where the shoe really binds and where the pinch is felt is on housing. The fear that whites have over Negroes moving into their neighborhoods is without question the deepest fear that bonds in white society today.
Does the Negro himself feel strongly about open housing?
Well, the Negro does. Yes, Negroes are committed 78 to 22 to integrated housing. Make no mistake about that. They are four square for that. And this stands in complete juxtaposition and comparison with the low-income whites who are just as fiercely, 70-30, opposed to integrated housing. So right at the level where it'll happen, in the neighborhoods, you get this clash.
What about the so-called white liberal at the end of the summer?
Well, there's been a dramatic shift here. Back in 1963, two out of every three white college-educated liberal people, mainly in the North, were in sympathy to the civil rights movement. On the eve of this summer, in May of this year, we found just about a majority, 50% of these white liberals who were sympathetic, a slippage. But at the end of the summer, it's scarcely more than 1 in 4 who feel sympathetic any longer. There's been a disenchantment among your white liberals with the civil rights movement.
Do Negroes themselves support the tactics of their various leaders? And I wish that you'd differentiate between Carmichael and King.
Well, Mike, I think it should be pointed out that Negroes support militant policies on the part of their leaders, but they make a very sharp distinction between the militancy with overtones of violence that is represented by Stokely Carmichael and militancy with dedication and commitment to nonviolence, which seems to be the policy of Martin Luther King. And it's no happenstance that King is literally the leader of the movement, while Carmichael is neither well-known nor well-supported.
Finally, Mr. Harris, what about the backlash in the November elections?
Mike, it could be decisive in this election. It could be decisive because it can tear the Democratic Party apart at the seams in the North, where traditionally low-income whites and low-income Negroes must be on the same side. Today, they're not on the same side over civil rights. This could cost the Democrats and cost them heavily. In fact, it could have an effect in 20 out of the 45 freshman Congress seats. The white backlash issue could be the decisive issue November 8th.
Thank you, Lewis Harris. There can be no doubt that at the end of summer 1966, the white man and the black man in the North eye each other with more suspicion and hostility than they ever have before. As Lewis Harris points out, even the white liberal confesses his impatience, his disenchantment. And the black moderate has begun to wonder how long he'll be able to restrain his more militant brothers, or perhaps whether he must join them. And who can say that the next summer will not be more violent than the last? The thought of open racial warfare in the United States is so far-fetched, so repugnant, as to be ludicrous to most of us. But the bitter question is how to repair the dangerous and widening breach between black and white American. Edmund Burke has said, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. If the methods of the extremists, black and white, are not eventually to prevail, then the rest of the community, black and white, the vast majority, must come together now to solve this American dilemma. Mike Wallace, good evening.
All right, everybody, Joseph Gibson podcasting here, understanding the times in which you live today. Black power versus white backlash. Not much has changed. I mean, they're talking the apocalypse back then. Civil war. Everything's going to burn down, you know. Nothing happened. Maybe it's the same crap today, you know. I mean, they were doing the same thing back then. Marching down the streets, I mean, burning down. They just didn't have Dollar Trees back then, Dollar Generals. You know, they didn't have the places and the cell phones and the Sprint stores and everything. You know, they had different factories and whatnot. They had more industry. They had more jobs actually available, real quality jobs. But the same happened. The same thing's happening today. Black Lives Matter, same thing. That group back that they were talking about there, same thing, infiltrated. It was infiltrated. Provocateurs, you know, supplying them with the guns and everything and the boots and the uniforms, same thing. Today, same thing. George Soros, you know, funding the Black Lives Matter and whatnot, and people buy into it. The only thing that's a little bit more different today is if you look at the pictures today, okay, of the marchers, what do you see? You see, back then it was all blacks pretty much. I mean, that was 98% easy if you look at every single march. And today, what do you got? It's probably 40% blacks, 60% whites. What's that tell you? What does that tell you right there? Something, and still the problem is not fixed. So my point would be what? Ding, 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 hang on. Can you figure it out? Obviously, there's somebody up above holding the strings, the puppet strings, guiding everybody. Right? That would be common sense. Think about it, what I just asked you, what I just said. There's people, the elite, control it, and that's what they want. And it's a progression phase to destroy America from within. And until people realize that, we're not going to get nowhere. We're not going to get nowhere except in a cage. And they're going to continue to take away our liberties. I mean, you go back and look at the bills they were passing back then, same thing as like today. Taking away our freedoms little by little, little by little, little by little. And the back and forth between good and evil kept going on. But you still had the tribalism, you know. And whatnot. Look, I get that. You know, listen, I don't want to go up to Martin Luther King Drive, walk around 3 o'clock in the morning. Same thing back in 1966. Well, they didn't have a street name after them. They didn't die yet. Wasn't shot. But, you know, the same thing was violent. You heard what the guy said. You know, the lady said, I mean, it's not safe. We got to get the heck out of there. You know, I'm white. I want to live there. We got the heck out of there. It's not safe. It's not safe today either. With all the technology, cameras on every pole. It's not safe. What's that tell you? You know, I mean, it's common sense. You got to figure it out. Well, 657-383-0616. See, I didn't even look at the boards yet. I don't know if anybody's even there. Press number one if you want to talk or comment. Let me get over here to the board. Shut this down here. Hopefully the audio was okay. I called in to my own show, and I listened to it. And you know what? The people out there complaining about the damn audio, you know what? Knock it off. Come on. You know what? You guys drive down the road with the windows down with the cell phone and everything. You know, nobody knows how to talk on it. You listen to that crap, you know. Why don't you learn something? You know, turn the volume up. All right, anyway, let's see here. Oh. Person number one, if you want to talk here tonight and join into the conversation. I can't be, let's see here. Let's see. No, Randy's not coming. Is that Randy, the wise guy there that always calls in here and wants to cause problems and whatnot? Oh, yeah, that's right, Ashley. It's your board, Ashley. Well, Ashley, nobody tells you to listen to the show. You can just go roll over into your ditch there and go back to sleep. You know, nobody told you to listen to the show. Go over to Tony Talk and listen to your sexual perversion and the nonsense and all that, you know, because that's about as close as you're ever going to get to sex, Ashley. Okay? So, you know, again, we know you weigh about, what, 550 pounds maybe? You know. So just Ashley, just go, just, like I said, go roll over in your ditch. You know, big talk, but no action as always, Ashley, just like the rest of them in there, you know, that don't want, that want to run their mouth. Anyway, let's see here, 203, no, you know, you had your hand up, you just muted, just took it off there. All right, well, I don't got anybody that wants to press 1 here, 657-383-0616. I know I got a bunch of people that are listening on, over here on Twitter here. So I think a lot of them are international calls get through because I got an email on that. If you guys are listening to international, I'd email and complain to Blog Talk Radio because we used to be able to get international calls. I remember I used to take international. They used to be able to get through. And for some people are saying now that people like from Canada even cannot get through. You know, I remember I had a guy that used to call in all the time from Morocco. He used to call. His name was Mike. He used to call in from Morocco and talk about, he had a lot of good, he brought up a lot of good points, but he disappeared, so maybe that's why Blog Talk Radio has gone over a lot of changes that have screwed the podcast, the hosts of these shows. Basically, Blog Talk Radio, to be honest with you, it really sucks. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that it's got the most easiest studio that you can use. I mean, you go to Podbean, you cannot figure out this. You got to go to school for 10 years to figure it out. You know, studio. And then as soon as you figure it out, they change the policy. Or they change it and switch it up on you, like Amazon, you know. And then, you know, here's our new one, but, you know, with new system here. And then you're not grandfathered in, and then they change the prices on you, and they whack you. You know, it's all bait and switch tactics, you know. So that's Blog Talk Radio. It's really messing around. I remember they used to have a chat room, too, Blog Talk Radio. I remember if everyone, they didn't have the chat room format they did. Remember the old chat room? Man, I used to get sometimes 30, 50, 60 chatters in my chat room. Ever since they switched the format, I can't get more than a dozen. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. So, I don't know. I got two private callers here, so we'll take the first one here. Private caller, you're unmuted. Go ahead, private caller. This guy, I hope this ain't Randy, the jerk or whatever. Go ahead, you're unmuted. All right, might be sleeping. Wake up. Going once, going twice. All right, I'll go to my next private caller. Next private caller. Wait, I got another. He just came back in here. Let me see here. Private caller. You want to talk or not? I don't want to waste too much time here. You know, if you press 1, speak, please, okay? I'm giving you a chance. I want to give everyone a chance. So sometimes I don't understand the connection or whatever, what have you. Okay, that's fine. All right, next private caller. Go ahead. You're on now. Let's see here. Go ahead, private caller. Can you hear
Hello,
me?
Hello, my name is... Yes, my name is Gianni. I'm from Boston, and I would like to make a statement. But will you let me make the statement without hanging up on me?
Yeah, as long as you're not swearing and threatening people and doing something stupid. But go ahead. But I want to give you a fair warning here, okay? I just want to give you a fair warning. All right, I'm going to give you about my disclaimer here.
Well, I don't have money, but what I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I've acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you.
Okay, there. Okay, so just go ahead now. You can make your statement.
Joe hates Mexicans. He hates blacks, too. Bridget walked out on him. Noah did, too. Joe's drug dealer was arrested, and now Joey is crying the blues. BitBanker pays Joey's rent. Joey can't even tie his own shoes. Joe owns Spectrum Internet 762. He wants to pay the bill by sucking the man's goo. Now the NSM hates you for running your snitch mouth. Joe moved in with Sarge and is sleeping on his couch. Joe Gibson's show should be banned because it sucks, but what else would he do? I really don't care, but my message is, hey, Joe, fuck you.
Very good. Yay! Oh, that was brilliant. Brilliant. How long have I been on the air now on Blog Talk Radio since, 2013? Let's see, so that's, it's taken you all that time to put that together. I would say that is quite impressive for someone of your intelligence level. So, I mean, I really think that maybe you should get the Medal of Freedom. Maybe we should write to Biden. Well, he can't read anyway. Maybe send it to his AI robot, the press secretary there, the one that's come, you know. And you should definitely, this should be submitted to the White House. You should get the Medal of Freedom. Problem is, though, is they can't dig rats and scum and crap out of the sewer to bring to the White House. Now, do you have anything else to add? Bottom dweller? No, you're speechless. You can't figure out your 3 minutes of brain time has run out. You know, but, hey, that was creative, though. I'll give you credit. We should, can I get the copyright to that by any chance? No, you don't want to say nothing now, huh? All right, everybody. All right. Well, I hope you guys liked the show here tonight. Like I said, we went back there. That was 1966. Mike Wall was there. CBS News, primetime show, I think. I wasn't alive back then. I don't know. But it was basically a reflection of what we see the past couple summers. Don't you agree out there? I mean, with the Democrats, the battle. Well, the Democratic Party was more moderate. They had a more moderate Democrat Party back then. But they had the leaders like JFK that he was mentioning. He didn't even mention his name. You notice that? You know, he didn't mention Mike Wallace. And a lot of people say Mike Wallace was a racist for, you know, doing that story. You know, so the way he, What, Ashley? Call this number live on the air now. No, I'm not calling no number live on the air because I don't know who I'm calling. Unbelievable. Anyway, the chat room is very interesting, Ashley. You know, I mean, Ashley, don't you have a life or something? I mean, it's 8:30 at night. I mean, don't you have any type of life whatsoever except to haunt me? Or is it that you're so fat that you can't get out of your chair? You know, I mean, did the crane come this month to give you a bath? I mean, just let me know. You know, I mean, we can get you, we can probably call 911 for you and help you out, you know. I mean, are you stuck, Ashley? I mean, you know. Unreal, man. I mean, just that was a good poem there. All right, 657-383-0616. If anyone wants to comment here tonight on the podcast and join in, and I just knocked three of you off there because I know who you are. I know the perpetrator there that just read that thing. He won't talk no more because so I'll mute him. Let me mute him there. It was probably pre-recorded, that message. Ashley, what do you want? You keep hacking into my chat room and popping up there with your private messages. Knock it off. Unreal, man. Jeez. Nope. And then John, who's John there? It's on Facebook, sending me a message. No, Bitbanker's not on tonight, so you can't. I guess she's got something to say to Bitbanker. I mean, I could relay the message if you want. You know, that's. I mean, I'm sure Bitbanker's not. Again, Dr. Peter Ventura is not coming on either. So all you Dr. Peter Paul Ventura fans. Oh, that's right. We figured out who that jerk was that was crank calling here. I got to find his name. I want to read it over the air. I hope I can find it here. We found out who the guy was out there in California that's been haunting Dr. Peter Ventura. And you remember the guy that he would call in and say, "Good evening, I'm the real Dr. Peter Ventura." You know, and you know the jerk. Real jerk, this guy. I can't find that. I had it written down. I forgot all about that. We got his name, his address, his telephone number, his real number, and we know who he is. And hopefully he'll go, you know, he hasn't called in for a while, that guy, but we figured out who he was, and you may be next. You see? And I did play my disclaimer the other night with two of us, you know, all of you people throughout the years on how you've harassed me and called me and put up Craigslist. I remember the Craigslist tickets. That was, you know, they put an ad up on Craigslist saying that I have Lionel Richie tickets. That was like, what, 3 years ago you guys did that? You know, and I was getting bombarded by phone calls from people saying that I had, you know, how much were the tickets or you know, do I still have them for sale? You know, trying to disrupt me and disrupt my day. And didn't work, though. Craigslist, of course, we know is all filled with scams anyway. And I knew a guy actually in the prison system that was doing 72 years for the measles murder in Connecticut. He that's how sick people are out there on Craigslist, folks. And this is, I'm going to give Craigslist a plug here, negative publicity, because when I complained to them about the Lionel Richie ticket thing, they did nothing to help me whatsoever, you know, no cooperation at all. So anyway, Craigslist, dangerous place to shop. I wouldn't go there. I don't even know if they exist anymore anyway, but if they do, a terrible place. Everything's a ripoff on there. But anyway, this guy, his name was Ron, and Ron Perkins, actually, and he's doing time in Cheshire Prison right now, where he should stay for the rest of his life. Dirtbag. Him and about six friends apparently lured this girl, a 13-year-old girl, to a river and, you know, raped her, obviously, and, you know, killed her, wrapped her up in a blanket, round chains, and threw her in the river. Well, they found, obviously, you know, they all left semen and DNA in the girl, and they found the body, and of course they all rolled on each other and ratted each other out, co-defendants, and who could get the least amount of time. I think the guy that got the least amount of time, I forgot his name, he got like 18 years, but everyone else ended up with 40, 60, you know, so, but, you know, and they deserve it. You know, this was a 13-year-old girl, and that was a horrific crime. Terrible, terrible, disgusting for people to do something like that. And to kill a girl that had a future, her entire life ahead of her, and they lured her. And it's not like she was out there looking for sex or anything like that. They befriended her and lured her to this place and tricked her, you know. And it's a shame. It's a shame that, you know, that the parents were not monitoring the internet better or they were out at work. I forget the story, you know, but that, you know, basically woke a lot of people up to monitor children and what they do on computers you know, when the parents aren't away or not there or in the room by themselves. It's disgusting for someone to do that. And then, of course, everyone remembers the Cheshire murders up there, the Cheshire, where they burnt the house down with the family in it and everything. That was, I actually knew that family. And terrible, horrible tragedy. And, of course, the police the father was the number one suspect for a while, but the two punks that did it, and cowards, pure cowards, man, pure cowards. They saw the mother and daughter in the grocery store, you know, shopping, and they just, for some reason, beaconed in on them and followed them and to the home, and the father was actually sleeping on a hammock on the front porch, and the bald-headed guy, I forgot his name, the bald-headed guy, he smashed him over the head with a baseball bat, knocked him out. They tied him up in the living room there, and then, they proceeded on to, kidnap the wife, bring her to the bank, make her take out what I think was like $1,800 out of the check. $1,800 for so they can get high on drugs. How disgusting, you know. And meanwhile, while the guy's at the bank with the mother, the other guy's raping the daughter, you know, and the younger sister's watching. I mean, it's just disgusting, man, you know. And it's just terrible. And anyway, the father was able to get out of the house. They lit the house on fire. And the poor little girl, after they raped her, they tied her to the bed. She burnt alive. I mean, that's how sick our society is. I mean, it's disgusting. And those two people, and they confessed to the murder, so it's not like there's a question of the system being corrupt and, you know, it's a mean system and guys, you know, and people should be free. I mean, I'm all for prisoners' rights. But those types of people that, you know, they confess to it, there's DNA or there's evidence, physical evidence. I mean, there's just all the elements of evidence is there to convict the person, including his confession. I believe people should be public displayed for their execution. And that is where the death penalty, I support the death penalty. You know, they should be executed publicly in the worst, horrific way possible in front of everybody, you know, for the crimes that they committed like that, to rape a woman and murder her and burn them alive and the daughter and the little girls and then I don't know how the father lives with that for the rest of his life, his family murdered like that. That's just something that is just unfathomable to live with for the rest of your life. I just don't know how you carry on with your life after knowing that has happened to your family. But I'll tell you what, and not to be able to get, I mean, I would be wanting to get in that jail to get at those guys. I think one guy committed suicide, which, you know, he took the easy way out. And, what else could he do? He's going to spend the rest of his life in jail. I mean, geez, I mean, I don't know why you'd even be taken alive. I mean, I'm not trying to stick up for it, but, you know, why put yourself through that? Just why do it anyway for drugs? A temporary high. For God's sake, man, if you're that desperate for money, go rob a bank. You know, I mean, if you're that desperate, don't hurt an innocent family. That family had another family, good future, good children, smart, you know, talented father, and a good mother, you know, a homemaker. I mean, just terrible, terrible. I just can't believe that people, the insanity out there in society. And I talk about this a lot with my pastor friends out there, and we talk about this consistently, the sickness in society out there, the lack of compassion, the lack of forgiveness, it's just argument, I'm right and you're wrong no matter what, and I'm going to destroy you to make sure I'm proven right, because nobody sees reason anymore. You can show people cold, hard facts right to their face, and they still refuse to believe or change their mind. I mean, I'm always willing to listen to facts and change my mind if you could prove me facts and prove me wrong, because I'm argumentative too. Everyone knows that on this show. I mean, if I think I'm right, I'm going to, you know, stand up for my what I believe in. But if you could prove to me I'm wrong, I will be happy to change my and concede defeat. You know, I mean, I just, it's, but, that's the problems with society today. But the main topic here tonight, of course, was we comparing the Black Lives movement and the summers, the past few summers here, where the George Floyd case and whatnot, Trayvon Martin, everything, all that stuff, compared to the 60s. And what Watts and all that and in the militant movement where, you know, there's going to be civil war in this country. And they thought it was going to happen. They thought it was going to happen. But it didn't, did it? And now they think it's going to happen again. Man, I think it's going to be a civil war. Don't you hear people calling to this podcast show saying the same thing? It's going to be civil war. We got, you know, ain't nothing going to happen, man. It's not going to happen. Not going to happen. And if it came close, they got things that round you up, and they will put you in some place where you will not be warring with nothing but center blocks, all right? And that's just the way it's going to be. So you don't blame the police departments. It's not their fault. The police department, it's not their fault what's going on, okay? Don't blame the black man. Don't blame the white man, okay? It's not their fault in general, the whole entire picture of what's going on. Don't blame just the Jews. It's not just their fault for what's going on. Don't blame just the Jesuits. There's an evil force behind all of this that influences the free will of mankind. That's the guilty party. And who is the guilty party? We're talking about evil, Satan, devil, Lucifer, whatever you want to call them. That's your thing that's creating all this. That's who you hold accountable. And if you want to defeat Satan, then change your life and start becoming a better person and start listening to reason and be a little more meek and understand the times in which we live today. Very simple. Not that hard to figure out. You know, so there's good and there's bad. Stand up for the good. 657-383-0616 if you choose to call in tonight, press the number 1, and I'll bring you on to the podcast live, barring any crank calls or other people I don't want to take away from the elements of tonight's podcast. I've been trying to stay away from as much of that type of atmosphere as possible. So let me check the boards again here and see who we got here. Okay, no takers. Okay, that's good. All right, let's see. We got about a dozen people, about 10, so... All right. Let's see here. Let's check the chat room there. A bank, hell, get a job. Depends who you pray. Oh, you must have been listening. That was earlier then. Okay. Karl Marx Day. Biden administration probably pushed for Karl Marx Day. 69 Mike Hunt says, the midget from Brookville is a Jew. That's right. It's me. It's all me. I don't know what they're talking about. Prayers don't work, Ashley. Yeah, okay, pray for her. Yeah, pray for Ashley. You're right about that, Mark. I will agree with you there. Where's the Sarge at tonight? Sarge ain't calling in. I don't see him. He's in the chat room, though. Huh. I guess he didn't want to comment on the 60s. He's from Sarge, aren't you from? Wasn't he in Chicago there? Sarge, wasn't he out there? I'm surprised he wouldn't know. Oh, well, Ashley. Now, why you got to put addresses in the chat room? You know, terrible. Nothing. No, just no reason for it. No reason at all. But actually, I'm not calling any numbers for you. I'm sorry, because I don't know who you got me calling, and I'm not going to feed into that nonsense. Okay. So the civil rights movement, which that's what they called it, but it was the same racial tension between each other as it is today. So today it's not a civil rights movement. Now they're calling it a anti-police or defund the police movement and stuff like that. And that's still not the truth of what's really happening, of why things are happening. So tonight we are going to go over to the open phones of the NSM and listen in there. I think they might be on right now. Are they on? We're going to head on over there. Oh, they've still got about 6 minutes before they come on. And we'll listen to the beginning of that podcast there over there, and I'll be calling in there, of course. I support the open phones with Bert. Like I said, I don't have any problems with Bert. He's a very reasonable man. He believes in what he does, and he stands up for what he does, you have to respect an individual like that, and that's what we need more of in today's society. We need more people, and to quote earlier in the documentary here, earlier where they were talking about the guy was saying, give me, give me, give me, give me, give me, he needs to give us the buildings, give us the money, buy the buildings and stuff like that. That is the same narrative today of what people think on how to cure the problem and solve the problem. Correct? So that's what, let's see, okay, the board's just lit up again. All right, we'll go ahead and go with the take callers here. Press number one if you want to call in. And hopefully you will listen to the documentary there. Like I said, I apologize if the audio was a little bit choppy, but hey, it's from the 60s, man. You know, can't download the stuff there from there. It's hard for me. Let me go at 909 first because I recognize that number. Go ahead, 909.
Hello, Joseph. It's Suzette from California.
I thought it was you. I recognized the number. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, thank you. Yeah, I talk about a blast from the past. Well, to comment on as far as any type of solutions, I think, you know, number one, two things. Number one, being a racist is not illegal. You can be a racist in America. You can be almost anything in America as long as you're not hurting or harming anybody, you know, personally, their person or any of their property or anything like that. You can be a racist if you want to be a racist. Now, to discriminate is based on racism. Of course, we have laws against that. So we're set there. But I think from as far as where we began and where we are now, which there's always work to be done, I think if we just stop talking about it, it won't be as much a big deal. And now, don't get me wrong, there's going to be racism anywhere you go in the world. Somebody's going to be bigot, you know, or racist. There's no way you're going to find somebody or a country that doesn't have anybody that's non-racist. So first we got to deal with that. You know, we can just deal with that reality that you're not going to eliminate every racist in the entire world or even in our country. It's not going to happen. Because we're individuals who have our own beliefs and feelings about things, and that's just the way it is. And you can't make people.
You know, I don't like to call it racist. I just like to call it you're always going to have people that dislike other people. You know, I mean, it's not going to get along. I mean, you know, that's just the way it is. And people have that option, that choice. And it should be, but today, really, you don't because, you know, you're annexed out of your neighborhood if you dislike the, you know, see, in the documentary there, you noticed how the white people were more blunt and told how they felt. You know, look, you know, I don't want to live with black people. I like them. I get along with them at work, but you know what? I don't want them living in my neighborhood. And you know what? I don't like troublemakers. And they just told the facts. Today, if you said something what they were saying, you would be fired from your job. You'd be, you know, you probably even be arrested. You know, I mean, who knows?
It's sad but true. You're so right. And that's how far we've gotten. And people have you know, forgotten that we do have laws that if there's an extreme, like you said, dislike, where it's infringing upon, you know, their personal rights or harming them in some way, and we have laws in place for that, you know, to handle that, discriminatory laws. So, you know, there's protections that are there. And to say there's systemic racism, that everybody's racist even before they're born, there's Jane Elliott. You should look into her. There's quite a few clips you can find on YouTube about her and what she does. And basically she's teaching this critical race theory in corporations and stuff like that. She used to be a school teacher.
Oh, really?
And she used to, and she used to practice that in her class. They have a video of that as well, and making the white kids cry, blaming them for their white skin and their white privilege. And the kids are tried to stand up for themselves, and then she made them cry after all. You know, she's like telling them, you know, as far as fucking privilege, you know, shut up.
Yeah.
Sit down.
Let me ask you this question. I'm gonna, if anybody out there, if you can't get it, who was the first slave owner, black slave owner? What was his name?
Oh, I have no idea, but I know I know of him, but I just don't know his name, honestly.
Okay. All right. Well, it's Anthony Johnson, actually. Anthony Johnson was the first man to come over from Africa and own slaves, black, and he was black.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, isn't that amazing?
It is, and even if you bring that up to people, it doesn't ring a bell. So what? So what? You know, what are you saying?
Yeah.
There's still more white people that own slaves, and it's like, well, that's not the point I was making. I was making the point that, there's slavery by anybody. Anybody can own slaves if they put them into that position, but it's not a white-black thing.
Yeah.
But they don't hear it.
And that's what everybody tries to make it into, a white-black thing, and that's not true. That's not true at all, you know. And it was quite common, actually, especially in Virginia, for blacks to own other blacks, you know, as slaves. It was they came out. I forgot what the law was that they came out and they passed, where it was white, black, or Indian could own slaves, you know. So, and a lot of people don't know that. They don't get it.
Nope.
It's weird.
No, they don't want to research it because it'll be the truth and they can't handle the truth. You can't handle the truth.
That's correct.
The white people who were talking about not wanting black people to live in their neighborhood, and they didn't want, any type of hooligans or whatever. It's because, okay, so in all races, we have professionals, whether it be doctors, scientists, astronauts, whatever. In almost every industry here in the United States, we have people of all races that occupy those professions. And that's a good thing. I mean, how did they get there? You know, and if they do get there, certain groups like to pick on those people, blacks mainly, calling them coons and Uncle Toms, and basically putting them down.
You're a sellout.
Yeah. So you either a sellout or you stay in the ghetto. It's up to you. And the ones that stay in the ghetto are the ones that complain, you know, over there is a clean urban area, white people live there. How come we don't have a nice area to live in? How come our area is always, you know, broke down, a ghetto? And it's like, well, usually because, as I said on my show, white people or people in those areas that are clean, not necessarily just whites, but in those areas, they take pride and they have investments in their property, so they keep them nice. In the documentary,
you heard Mike Wallace say, and you heard interview the guy, he said, property owner there, he said, the most important thing these people will have in their life is their home.
Yep.
You know, and that's interesting.
Yep. And the fact that they want people to do things for them, the black people, you know, they live in the government housing, and the government housing, when it was brand new, shiny, and, you know, all ready to go, it didn't get dilapidated in the position that it is in current day by people who cared about it. It got that way by people who didn't care about it. And then they want somebody to fix it. And then the people who predominantly run those or govern those cities are, you know, black people. And so those black people want to get reelected. They make the promises. Then the people in the ghetto, they accept those promises, and those promises never come about. And so they just keep wishing and hoping that it will be. And those promises are to give them or to get those things cleaned up for them rather than having those people do it themselves, as far as pick up the trash in your front yard, you know, on your street.
That's
right. It looks so cheap if you just take care of it, you know.
That's right.
So,
hey, Suzette, before I get to my next caller, go ahead and tell everybody about your podcast here and how they can find it.
You can find it on Spreaker on Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time under Suzette Live Talk. And, I have some guests on periodically, but mostly conversations and discussions about the layer beneath the surface of the media. You know, go a little deeper.
There you go.
So can you join me next Tuesday?
I've been meaning to, and it's 5 o'clock. So it'd be 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time?
Pacific Standard Time, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
That's why I screw up. You see, I'm on the East Coast. I'm here in Greensboro, North Carolina. So you're 3 hours behind me, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So everybody got to pay attention to that now. You got a call-in number?
I have Skype. So you can Skype in. I usually post the Skype link into the chat room, and then you just click on it, and it'll bring you right in.
Gotcha. All right. Awesome. I'm going to bring on another private caller here. So you just hit yourself. That's fine. I don't ever hang up on anybody. Well, I do, but those people are just, of course, not like you. You know? But let me see. Private caller. Go ahead. Hopefully this is Sarge. Go ahead. Private caller.
Hi, this is Tony Furtado. and you've been harassing the gay people, and I'm going to send you a gay pride flag that you need to hang in order to make amends to the gay people you've insulted, okay? Will you put the gay pride flag outside of your trailer?
No, I will not put it outside my trailer because I don't live in a trailer. But what I'll do with the flag, though, is I'll use it for a good rag to mop up my kitchen floor with. How's that?
You have been so abusive to the gay community. You need to apologize, number one. Number two, you should have a gay co-host to let him speak his opinion instead of your racism. This has gone on for too long, Joseph, and you've been abusive
my racism.
To the gay community.
How am I racist?
Yeah. And there are many gay people at the NSM, and they're going to come over and chop your dick off if you're not nicer to the gay people, okay? My name is Dunn, and I'm here with my boyfriend, Tony Farrar. Now, go to hell.
Okay. Obviously, one of my gay fans there that love me. So, let's see. Next private caller, go ahead. Go ahead. You're unmuted. No? No, you don't want to talk either? Okay, next private caller. Next one. You're all private. Why?
Yeah, I'm boy, here. That was edifying. Hey.
My fans. They love me.
Hey, man. look, you might want to check out. Yeah, it was great to hear Suzette and the comment she made, but I'd like to piggyback onto that a little bit. You might want to check out William Ellison Jr. of South Carolina in the antebellum years. Mr. Ellison was the largest black slave owner in South Carolina. He had 63 slaves. In fact, he was a major slave owner of any race. Maybe not the biggest, but big. And in fact,
how many did he have, Sarge? How many did he have?
63. And he was accused by slave owners.
Johnson's got him beat. He had 300. They say he had 300 at one time.
Well, he was accused. The other slave owners, it was considered kind of disreputable if you were a slave owner to be a slave breeder who actually bred slaves for sale. That was not thought to be very Christian among most slave holders. So Ellison apparently did that. He would even sell the children of slaves in order to make a profit. And even a lot of white slaveholders didn't think that was very Christian if you were a slave breeder. So Ellison apparently
now,
did that.
Now, where's the reparations? Where's the reparations for those? I mean, why
well,
does it surely
only
he must
that,
have family?
He also contributed mightily a great deal of money, particularly in that time, to the Confederate cause. He bought a lot of Confederate bonds, which, of course, were worthless after the war was over, so he lost a lot of money and became kind of destitute. But he heavily supported
the... Wow, that's interesting.
The,
I'm writing that down, actually. I'm going to look that up. That's interesting. Yeah, because you always debate these liberals, you know.
Pretty enlightening. But look, there's something even more frightening than William Ellison. Did you see the doddering old fool at a press conference today in the East Wing of the White House about crime? Did you hear what he said?
No, I didn't actually, so enlighten me, please.
Well, you need to go and see it, because I'm give you the worst of the lowlights. Now, he's in the East Room talking about crime. He reintroduced his extreme gun control agenda, naturally wants a ban on assault weapons, quote, unquote, and he wants to remind lawful gun owners, this is what he reminds me. I'm quoting. This is a quote from this doddering old senile goat of a rotten, low-good, low-down, usurping bastard. This is what he said. Those who say the blood of patriots, you know, and all the stuff about how we're going to have to move against the government, if you think you need to have weapons to take on the government, you need F-15s and maybe some nuclear weapons. In other words, he went full Eric Swalwell on us, and you never go full Eric Swalwell. In other words, he's implying that in order to defeat this government, you got to have nuclear weapons, because I guess the implication is they might use them on you first if you dissent by force of arms. Imagine that. The President of the United States is issuing a veiled warning that nuclear weapons are available to the federal government to use against United States citizens. So your little AR-15 hurling a 55-grain bullet at 3,250 feet per second from maybe out to 1,500 yards is useless. Now, I'd like to remind Joe, this doddering old clown, of the letters of mark and reprisal clause in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, because he said that Second Amendment wouldn't allow you to have cannons. Again, look up Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution dealing with letters of mark and reprisal. Privateers would routinely be issued letters of mark and reprisal. And in order for the privateers to carry out their government-sponsored piracy against foreign warships and merchant ships, they would put their privately, legally purchased cannon on their ships. And guess what? They didn't even have to get a license from the non-existent Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms to do it. Think about that.
Wow.
Ain't that something, Joe? And by the way, between the states, the federal government openly advertised public auctions of surplus military cannon. Ordinary citizens routinely purchased them, and the cannon they bought were fully operational. Now, of course, when you're an ahistorical, senile old goat who doesn't know a damn thing about the Constitution anyway, and less, even less about history, you just say dumbass things like this, and then, of course, the press won't challenge you. But to those of us who know a little bit about history and the Constitution, see, we know these things. Again, letters of mark and reprisal. Privateers routinely bought their own cannon and put them on their own ships, and they conducted warfare on behalf of the United States government. And they wanted to have military
news
to do so.
Did you hear this one, Sarge? Did you hear this one, or Suzette, or whoever that's still on here?
He just said that today.
Yeah, I'm pulling that one up next. Breaking there, John McVeigh found dead in prison after approved for extradition. You know who that is, right?
Yeah,
McAfee. I say McVeigh.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, but he's he's found dead. Found dead. So after being approved for his extradition. So, but that's interesting. There we go. Another conspiracy being unfolded right before our very eyes.
Well, the understanding is that he suicide because he didn't want to go back to the United States and face the music on tax evasion and all those other charges they had against him here.
Yeah, just like Epstein there, right? So come on. You know, we know why. You know, he knows he saw Clinton, you know, playing with all the girls, you know, and the kids and all the other ones. So he's loose lips. They don't want anything detrimental out there to their agenda, these socialists, these Democrats. You know, they don't demigods. They don't want – that's who they think they are. They're gods. You know, they don't want nothing that's going to apprise them, and they will eliminate you. And they're starting at the top. They're cutting the head of the snake off. They're starting at the top of it. So if you're a billionaire and you're powerful and you know dirty secrets and you've got loose lips, you know, they're going to get rid of you, you know. Well, they've been doing that for a while. I mean, the Clintons have been responsible for so many murders already. You know, they're just evil. They're an evil family. They're going for broke. They want to destroy America from within, and they're doing a damn good job of it right now. That's for sure. You know?
Yeah.
But that story I just had the story about the guns.
Yeah, this is the most wicked regime I've ever seen. I mean, this guy Biden, he just says anything that pops into his head. He never checks anything. No, the press won't fact check him. They just let him get away with stupid thing. Can you imagine Trump saying something, making a veiled threat about nuclear weapons against dissident American citizens who might resist with force of arms? Can you imagine what they'd be doing if Trump made anything remotely like that?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just don't know what the future holds. I just don't see. I think what we talked about the other night about Biden, I think that he's going to, I think he's, this year he will no longer be president. I think they'll remove him because he just can't, he doesn't know where he's at. How could you have a guy like that running the corporation, the United States corporation? He doesn't know where he's at. I think, and Kamala Harris, there's controversy around her, so you know who's next in line, right? Where are we going to go, Pelosi? You know, I mean, what? That would be something, huh? Trump and going against Pelosi.
I know we can't get this in a court, and I know that it's a taboo subject, but for God's sake, can somebody even ask the basic question? Is this woman an Article II natural-born citizen qualified to be either president or vice president? I say she isn't, because she's only a citizen because they passed the 14th Amendment in 1868. It didn't exist when the Article II was ratified, and the 14th Amendment doesn't refer to Article II in any way, shape, form, or fashion. How in the hell can she be a natural-born citizen if she wouldn't even be a citizen without the damn amendment? And the amendment doesn't say that it makes her a natural-born citizen according to Article 2.
You're right.
Can we even have the court examine the matter to see if they make a ruling, is why she's actually an Article 2 natural-born citizen?
You're not even supposed to discuss it. Yeah. Well, anyway, here's this quote right here. President Biden on the Second Amendment: if you think you need to have weapons to take on the government, you need F-15s and maybe some nuclear weapons. The point is, it's always been to rationally limit the type of weapon that can be owned. And that they do have the video. In typical Biden fashion, that statement is totally false, and he's even been called out for promoting the false claim in the past. Austin's American Statesman fact check from June of 2020 concluded Biden was full of it when he claimed you weren't allowed to own a cannon during the Revolutionary War as an individual. It seems highly unlikely that there were restrictions on the private ownership of cannons. A historian and director of military studies at Baylor University named Julie Ann Sweet told the outlet. But Biden,
Biden fumbled. It's literally a lie. Like, everything he says is either a semi-lie or a total lie or utterly ignorant. And, he says these things all the time. He doesn't know where he is. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's utterly incompetent. He's a fool. He's a fool of the first rank. And I don't know why, just because he's got a job title, I don't know why we have to respect him, because I don't respect him. I'll accept the fact that people are allowing him to be in the office because they say he won the election. But that's it. I have no respect for him whatsoever or his administration. I mean, zero. None. And I don't think any American who can think should.
I'm trying to find the one on the Second Amendment, but we already know that one anyway. But the state law is held unconstitutional. It's about 2,618 pages long, where they address the commerce and everything. And all state laws held unconstitutional. I mean, if you go to it, it starts at page 2,456. But this is stuff people should need to know. Ward versus Village of Monroeville. That's an Ohio statute authorizing trial for certain ordinance violations and traffic offenses before mayor responsible for finances when the fines, forfeitures, costs, and fees imposed in the mayor's courts provided a substantial portion of the village funds. So that's another case right there. And all this is very important. Doe versus Bolton. That's a Georgia statute right there. That's unconstitutional. Whitcomb versus the Communist Party of Indiana. New Jersey welfare rights org versus Cahill. Miller versus Gomez. All these state laws where that they shoot down. And here's Connecticut, because I know we got a bunch of Connecticut people out there listening. Valandis versus Klein. These are all Supreme Court decisions that you should be looking up that really set the precedent for unconstitutional statutes or ordinances that is planning on proposing, or the federal government for that matter, because they contradict themselves. Another one, important one for Connecticut, would be White versus Register, Ward East versus Oregon, another one would be Levitt versus Committee for Public Education and Religious Liberty. So these are all important decisions. I was reading that last night. I started reading. I'm going to try to finish it tonight. So I got a long way to go, obviously. But these are the things that people need to be paying attention to, not who their favorite baseball player is, stuff like that. We all know all that information, don't we? I go to the gym. I hear everyone talking about the football and the basketball, and that's all well and fine. But I'll tell you what. We should be talking about more serious and more important things that affect us every single day. I don't know how many times I do that on Facebook, where I just comment and I get trashed and thrashed and I get kicked off the platform. form or my stand I'm against community standards or whatever. I'm banned all the time from Facebook, so I'm surprised they haven't kicked me off permanently yet, but I'm sure they're working on it.
If
I mean, they're looking up posts from 2 years ago, you know? Go ahead, Suzette. Hang on, sorry. Go ahead, Suzette.
I just want to say that, yes, while we need to pay attention, we do not need to be paying attention to the shiny object. The shiny object being Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and their stupidity and the dumb things that they say or do for the day. Because while they're doing that, other people are actually doing things, doing real things to destroy our democracy.
That's right.
Merrick Garland last week had joined the United States with
Christ-like.
No. Where he's getting, my husband's looking it up really quick.
Christ Church Call to Action.
It's an international group. And that international
group. Yeah, that's Christ-like. It's called Christ-like. Yeah.
Christ Church Call to Action. If you type in Christ
Church. I'm sorry. But I thought that's what they said in the article. But, yeah, I know what you're talking about. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
And that gives the Twitter, Google, what was the other one, Amazon, Facebook, permission to shut down what they deem as white supremacy, terrorist, extremist groups, anything like that. They were responsible for shutting down the British First group, which was developed, you know, during the time of America First. They were in support of Trump, and their mission was to basically protect and preserve their country's values and belief in God and country, and they call them an extreme group. And when I say they, I'm talking about Twitter, Amazon, Facebook, this group that they formed called GIFT, and GIFT works with Christ Call to Action, or Christ Call anyway, and so they shut them down, and they had done it through social media. And, of course, other people are getting shut down too, but it was the way they went about trying to shut this group down because they had a lot of followers, and they didn't want those followers to increase because they wanted to keep their power towards working towards socialism. And so
while
we're following the shiny penny over here that's falling on his face or saying stupid stuff, you know, they don't have any hand in what's going on with these joining these groups or joining the WHO. The last time when Joe Biden fell up the stairs that week, we had joined back with the WHO, the World Health Organization. And so that news came out after. When Merrick Garland made his announcement last week, it turns out when I went to the website, we actually were joined with that group in May, but he made the announcement in June, saying that I'm proud to announce that we are joined with blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, but you did that last month. And you're just letting the American people know now after the fact. So we have to be careful.
I'll tell you what, you're absolutely correct. But a good thing, since you're obviously always looking for knowledge, I know you sent me a bunch of stuff there. I'm going to try to put it in the chat room. A good one to read, and it's a PDF document. It's Freedom Documents by Tim Turner. It talks about freedom for socialism, public school system, Texas, lawful or unlawful, Homeland Security, president, executive orders. You know, it goes over everything. The Constitution versus corporate law, the role of the church, is our nation a Christian nation, the return of Christ, bankruptcy of the United States, when did it happen, the wealth of the American people, your treasury account, the process, which it goes by types of bonds, charging accounts, bond orders, appointing fiduciary agents, freedom documents, you know, stuff like UCC-1, financing statement, addendums, attachment A, property list, power of attorney, commercial security agreement, all that stuff. It's got bonds and notes. I mean, this is a good PDF instruction manual. I mean, I wouldn't take it literally everything. I would cross-reference everything and check it out to make sure. But so far from what I've been reading and looking at, it's all right on the money. I mean, it coincides with a lot of the laws and statutes that are on the books that are the exact opposite of what we were at one time as a republic. you know, and what we were supposed to be, and what is really true law, and what is law, and what is the right law. And it's just, and so if we lost that and we can't get it back, even if we try doing it lawfully, then how the heck are we going to freaking do anything to achieve our goals and as Americans, you know, in today or tomorrow or for the future, for that matter? What do we do? You know, answers. I mean, I got to start wrapping it up here. So, Suzette, I'll just give you the final thoughts, and then, Sarge, you get them. How's that? All right, Suzette, I'll put it in the chat room now. Oh. There it goes.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you. I'll be looking out for that. My husband's under You Can't Steal My Freedom 1, so we'll get that link from you. Anyway, make sure you just – I just encourage people to just look what's on the other hand and ignore the one with the shiny penny and be aware of what's going on. Otherwise, if you're distracted by these other little things, you know, that's how we got in this place that we are now. A lot of people were distracted. And so anyway, pay attention to the other hand, the one behind the back.
You're welcome. I guess they're having a little battle in the chat room there. I don't know what's going on in there, but don't get caught up in that, Suzette. but thank you for joining me tonight. I appreciate it. And, yeah, check out Suzette's podcast there. Check it out. And, Sarge, go ahead. I'm going to give you the floor. Go ahead. Final thoughts.
Yeah, I was looking for you yesterday to commemorate, certainly not to celebrate, but to commemorate the 80th anniversary of one of the 10 most significant days in history of the 20th century, and that was Operation Barbarossa, June 22nd, 1941.
Right? Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
you know, it was enormous, what the events that were set off that still have repercussions to this day.
That's true.
I mean, the most titanic loss of life in the history of the world in one battle area ever. 30 million Soviets and 4.5 million Germans and all kind of Axis allies and everything else. It just changed the world literally and brought communism to the doorsteps of Western Europe and started the Cold War.
Yeah, and imagine if it would have changed, though. The operation would have changed. Imagine if Hitler, I mean, why did it? What, in your opinion, we all know why, but in your opinion, why did he lose that? I mean, was it because he went to Stalingrad? What do you think, in your opinion? Everyone's got those armchair
quarterbacks.
They're
all kind of fact. You can war game Operation Barbarossa over and over again. But when you look at the opening successes of Barbarossa, 100,000 prisoners at Uman and wiped out two army groups. Then he went on to Smolensk and Vyazma, took another 660,000 prisoners. Then on to Kiev, 665,000 prisoners there. And then all the encirclement battles in the Belarus and the Ukraine. Over and over again, just wiped out the entire frontier army of the Red Army in less than 5 months. 3.5 million prisoners. You can forgive their overconfidence. How in the hell does any country come back from something like that? They didn't just lose armies, Joe. They lost entire army groups in encirclements. The German army would encircle them and just annihilate them. And they still didn't get defeated.
I know how.
There's a whole lot of reasons as to why the German effort failed. One of them was the utter ruthlessness of Joseph Stalin and the fact that he was able to harness that ruthlessness to Russian patriotism. They stopped talking about communism so much as Mother Russia and the latent patriotism of even many of the Ukrainians faced, frankly, with much Nazi brutality and the fact that, you know, the Nazis rebuffed to a large extent. They're welcoming them as liberators. It just turned the tide. Winter set in. Hitler had gone to bail out his Italian ally in the Balkans, lost 4 critical weeks bailing out the Italians in Greece and the Balkans, and that set their timetable behind. They got caught by the winter just outside of Moscow by a few kilometers. If they'd have taken Moscow, I think it would have been over because the Soviet Union
was definitely
directed They needed a central director. They were afraid to do anything without Stalin's permission. If they'd have cut off the nerve center at Moscow, I think it would have been a whole different thing. But they failed to do it, and I think those 4 critical weeks they lost bailing out the Italians and the Balkans when they were getting their asses kicked by the Greeks and the Slavs there was critical. Just killed it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got to wrap it up here, Sarge. I'm going to go over to Open Phones over to the NSM. He does, that's pretty much open night there, so you we'll go over there and check him out. And that's Bert. And, of course, like I said, you know, I respect Bert and all. Like I said, I'm not over there where, you know, I'm not a part of the NSM, but I like the Open Phones. It brings good dialogue. Listen, we got to listen to everybody and every voice out there because we're all going to have to come together in this thing and freaking defeat the evil out there. And that's what it's all about, the evil. And don't get distracted, like Suzette said. That's a very good point. Don't get distracted and focus on little battles here and there because that's what they love. They love that because it absorbs our energy and doesn't use it for and it takes away from what we really need to be focusing on. So thanks, everybody, for listening tonight. God bless the Republic.
Okay.